Stephen Quayle's overview of ancient history, aliens, giants, genetic manipulation will cause you to ponder the future from an entirely different mindset and point of view. For more than 30 years, Quayle has been researching and investigating the alien phenomenon as well as lost civilizations of antiquity and how they all relate. Quayle states that the echoes of the cosmos are giving us an outstanding view of the events that lie ahead. Steve's background, by the way, involving documentary film production, still photography, have enabled him to put the script of history together in a very startling and revealing manner. Aliens and fallen angels, the sexual corruption of the human race, will captivate you, I'm sure, and inform you, fill you in with the blanks and question marks that you've got concerning the alien phenomena. He's also got a new book titled Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters, The Sum of All Terror, and that will be a accumulation of his previous works as well. Stephen Quayle, back to Coast to Coast. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good evening, George.
Welcome. By the way, first of all, before we get going, I wanted to thank you for helping me out and literally performing yeoman's work at minimal time on the war effort over the past several weeks.
Well, thank you.
Really appreciate that.
It will remain to be seen if, we'll be continuing on or if things will quiet down for a while.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, that's okay. You know, aliens and fallen angels, you know, I have always wanted to get a clear-cut definition from somebody on that term, fallen angels. What does that mean to you?
Well, first of all, the best background that I can give to a person is Genesis chapter 6 in the Old Testament. And then the next best definition would come from the Book of Enoch, which is called a pseudepigraphal writing. In other words, it's a book written in about 200 B.C. that basically is ascribed to Enoch. Now, fascinatingly enough, a fallen angel basically is the entities that God created in the heavens, and this is what the Book of Enoch teaches and the Bible teaches, and I think as we get into tonight's talk, it'll be pretty plain to everybody that specific angels created to stay within their habitation in heaven saw that the daughters of earth were fair and basically said, hey, we want to go down and mix with that, and in essence left the realm that God had created for them, came to earth, had children by the earth women, and basically produced a race of giants. You know, it's fascinating because the basis of this is the whole history of mythology throughout the world, George. There's nobody pretty much that you can go into their ancient history, ancient myths, legends, whatever you, oral tradition, and you get far enough back, and whether you're dealing with the Greeks, you're dealing with the Romans, the Babylonians, no matter who you're dealing with, this subject always comes up.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I've always believed, Stephen, that angelic beings were probably created before the physical realm of this universe. Am I pretty close with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's fascinating because when we were talking about the language of antiquity, it was very plain to so many of the historians that these guys weren't, quote, just recording legends and myths. They were recording the contemporary history of their time. And I think that most people cannot understand. We're talking about supernatural, the word preternatural, above nature. Somebody that had incredible intelligence, incredible strength, and by coming into the realm of men, which, by the way, was forbidden to them by God, the fallen angels obviously produced a race, if you will, a genetic bloodline of some very powerful entities. And the powerful entities became the giants, the Giborim, if you will, the mighty men of valor. And it's fascinating, George, because as we get into the giant situation, you know, everything is after its kind. I mean, you look around and today, with minor exceptions, you're not seeing this, the people that we read about through antiquity that some average 9 to 12 feet tall. Now, gravity obviously was different in those days. The whole cosmos, based on catastrophism, was structured differently. But the real interesting thing was, when you're talking about giants in the Bible and giants in history, which we'll get to, is that they had six fingers, six toes, and double sets of teeth. And it's kind of a fascinating and interesting subject matter because, again, even when you get into Roswell and some of the supposed artifacts, for instance, the control panel that people have alluded to, there were six finger positions, not five.
Oh, that's right.
And so what I've tried to do is provide, I guess you'd call it, the uniform field theory in understanding how the root produces the fruit. And you cannot get down to, the bottom line or the basics without coming to the conclusion that, hey, there has been tampering. And then when we get into later on the show, the culmination of this is a hybridized race that will be transhuman. And that's a very scary thing. It's why I call it the sum of all terror.
Now, fallen angels, not to be confused with Lucifer and his band of evil angels that ended up in hell.
Exactly. But now Lucifer and his evil angels, in some of the New Testament passages, for instance, in 1 Peter and stuff, it talks about the specific angels that committed these sex sins that have been reserved in a special place called Tartarus, okay?
All right.
It's only used in the New Testament in one place, and that's the abode of not all fallen angels, but just the fallen angels that committed sex sin. And 200 of them fell at a place called Mount Hermon, which obviously is in the Holy Land. You know, it's interesting to me that you and I were spent quite a bit of time talking about the war that's going on, if you will, in the cradle of civilization. And now we're talking about, I guess you'd say, the beginning of it, because we're talking about these angels when they decided to rebel against God. They swore an oath by themselves that, in essence, if I go down, you all go down with me.
Well, give me your thoughts, Stephen, on what you think even a role of an angel was supposed to be. I mean, why were they created in the first place?
Well, I think the bottom line is that, and again, God created the heavens, and angels, by the way, are just, one specific group of heavenly beings. We know there's cherubim, seraphim. I mean, we know there's all kinds of archons, principalities, powers, if you will, thrones, dominions. These are all things that have been identified through history. But obviously, and I can't tell you when they were created, but obviously before a man was created. The point being is that God populated the heavens, and I mean the heavens, not just what we see, but the realm we don't see. And I see no indication in history or in digging any of this stuff up that, that you can get away from it. When we get into Greek mythology, for instance, the bottom line is you always have the amorous gods, little g, coming to earth, fostering children by, the earth women, and then you have the, if you will, the goddesses getting uptight at the gods, Hera against Zeus, for instance, was Zeus being the father of Hercules by an earthly woman. The point is that it's fascinating, George. This thing is spread throughout all of mythology.
Well, that's true.
And all of history, and even if you go to the Babylonian epics of Gilgamesh, and you go into the everything that you can find, you're always getting it. And the whole giant fascination is interesting, because most people have heard either nursery rhymes or kids stories, Jack and the Beanstalk, for instance. We don't understand that contemporary society has lost, in my opinion, the grasp on reality and history that puts this stuff into perspective. And it's fascinating to me, because even some of the Mayan kings trace their lineage to fallen angels. And for most people that are into King Arthur, Merlin, is stated that Merlin's father was a fallen angel.
Now, I always thought, though, that fallen angel, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, because that fascinates me all by itself. But fallen angels, I thought they were non-physical. So how could a non-physical being, entity...
they have the power to basically morph and transform themselves. Jesus even said, the devil can appear as an angel of light. And I think that's probably the number one key question, because Jesus said in heaven, they are neither given or taken in marriage, but are as the angels. But when the angels kept not their first estate, that's when literally all hell broke loose on the planet. And it's my contention that, again, the whole UFO phenomenon is a carry forward of that which the fallen angels started literally thousands of years ago.
All right, let's assume then for a moment that you happen to have been there, that you jumped in a time machine to the beginning of time, and you become a witness to this whole fallen angel episode. Pick it up from the point where something obviously goes wrong in the heavens, and they're coming down to the good old planet Earth. Tell us what's going on.
Well, okay, maybe the best thing I could do if I can just give you kind of an interesting overview. It seems like the angels got together, with themselves. They bound themselves and they basically said, look, there are some very beautiful and comely women down there on earth. The children of heaven saw and lusted after them and said, let's go take wives from among the children of men and bring forth children. And then Samaya, or some Jaza, some people pronounce it, who is their leader, I fear if we do that I'm going to be in trouble with God, and I want you guys to swear an oath and all bind yourselves together with me not to abandon this thing, in other words, to go and do it. Now, there's a reason why that was being done, because, again, you've got this, for the creation of Adam and Eve and the seed of Adam and Eve, you've got the, if you will, the genetic interruption of that, because, again, the entire history of civilization, we can talk about pre-Adam and post-Adam, but you have the tampering of the genetic seed, and I believe that was to challenge God on his promise.
So they get together and basically say, let's cover each other's tails here.
You got it.
We're coming down to good old planet Earth. Now tell me about the ability to transform themselves and to travel here.
Well, first of all,
let me ask you this first. Let me ask you this. How do we know that fallen angels weren't indeed aliens, extraterrestrials, or maybe they were?
Well, first of all, if they were heavenly at one point, they were obviously extraterrestrial. But the point is that I would say that the big contention comes is that, first of all, these guys didn't need spaceships, okay, originally, because the bottom line is the historical accounts is they, if you will, show up almost like an explosion on Mount Hermon. Interestingly enough, even the people around the Himalayas, basically the title for the Himalayas are the mountains of the gods, okay? And it's fascinating because you go into some of the countries like Bhutan and Sikkim, and it's either the Garden of God, the River of God, and they use it in a little sense, little g. So the point that I think is really important for people to understand is somehow they have the ability to morph, to transform themselves, if you will. And it appears that when they chose to do that, they left behind certain powers. They could no longer go where they had come from.
Okay,
now I'm specifically talking, there's two groups, and you made it very clear. There's the group of fallen angels that had sex with earth women, which basically are the ones that God judged and held in everlasting chains of darkness until the end of time and the judgment of time. But then there are also fallen angels that did not commit sex sins that are out there and soon to, come on planet Earth as this battle in outer space takes place. Your question of how do I know they weren't aliens, it's fascinating because, when we get into the whole abduction scenario, Whitley Strieber has, written his books.
Sure.
And you notice, George, the fascination with sexuality in all of the abductions?
Yes.
And the probing, if you will, there's this, I guess you'd almost say, supernatural lust, if you will, drive to, mess around. Now you've got to know that if these beings that some people believe that created us, the aliens, the Anunnaki, the Sitchin type mentality, it's amazing because if they claim that the aliens then came and did that and created life on Earth, then who created the aliens? When you start out, if you start out with the concept of God, meaning he who creates out of nothing, in Latin it's ex nihilo, there's a big difference of taking something that's already made and working with it, as they're doing now in genetic engineering, versus being able to call into existence out of nothing but the pure power of who God is. So I think what I'm trying to get across to people is they've got to separate in their mind the rebellious angels and then the ones that had sex with earth women. And by the way, all the early what are called church fathers wrote about this. It was standard until about the 4th century when the Catholic Church said, hey, this is too hard to explain. We don't want to deal with this, so we'll just say that basically the bad guys married the good
girls.
Well,
it is literally, quote-unquote, a touchy subject.
Yeah, really touchy. And what's fascinating is every obelisk in the world, this is something that may seem a pretty profound statement, but historically, every obelisk in the world, basically pointed skyward, is what would you say, attributing the very monument to this very feat that these guys took on themselves, the ability to produce, you know, the giants. And the giants had supernatural abilities from the sense of what we know as standard abilities, not only in strength, but in wisdom. And again, in the Book of Enoch, which by the way is on my website and people can download it for free. And, I'm just saying that because, you know, people say, where can I go get it? Well, they can.
Right. And that's already linked up with us.
That's already
right?
linked up with you, but I'm just saying it's there to be, downloaded for free. And what it does, it gives a fabulous understanding that, for instance, Azazel taught men to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates and made known to them the metals of the earth and the art of working them, you know, and then ornamentation. And then each one of these fallen angels by name, which is in the Book of Enoch, taught humanity different things. And, you know, it's kind of like the knowledge of good and evil. You know, once you know how to make a sword, chances are you're going to use it on somebody.
Well, let me ask you this. Were they bad angels when they were here doing whatever they were doing? I mean, would you consider them all to be bad, or did they have some kind of contribution here to society?
Well, I would say this. They, you know, by God's standard, they were all judged and damned, okay? But what you know as civilization, I know as civilization, I think the myth that somehow it just all came out of the clay cuneiforms of the Sumerian and Tigris-Euphrates Valley is a absolute gross distortion of history. There are people who have done fabulous works on forbidden archaeology. You know, Graham Hancock, I take my hat off to him.
Michael Cremo,
Forbidden Archaeology, great book, you know. Michael's had to fight the establishment for so long. And you know, George, if you're an archaeologist or if you're any type of scientist and you don't toe the party line, you don't get your papers published, you don't get your, you know, bills paid, and there's kind of a...
You don't get your grant money.
You don't get your grant money. So there's a... You talk about censorship. Science is no longer the open field to honest inquiry. In my opinion, it's a very controlled field for the mind control that comes out of the scientific establishment.
Now, I'm picturing these angels as having wings and things like that. Now, you say they had the ability to morph.
Right.
But, I mean, do you think they actually looked like that? They had wings and they had the ability to fly like that?
Well, first of all, you know, how do I say this? I don't believe that the modern interpretation that you see, like the little cherubs, you know, and all
mm-hmm.
that stuff, I believe that, you know, most of that can be attributed to the Renaissance. Now, when you go into, for instance, Assyrian stelae, or the drawings of winged creatures, whether it's in Angkor Wat in Cambodia, the temples all over the world, there are some very astonishing looking men, and they seem to be able to quote unquote, you know, again, change that, but I don't believe that, you know, they look like the typical rendition of, you know, a Michelangelo painting or a Da Vinci painting.
All right. So they come down to planet Earth, they start to mate with women. What becomes of the children? What do they look like?
Well, the children basically become giants. They become, you know, huge because, again, one of the questions that I guess we might as well just deal with up front, you know, if these guys are big to begin with, how could they mate with the women? Well, all I can say is that they had the ability through the morphing process to size themselves accordingly. You know, when I talk about this stuff, I probably get that question emailed me more than any other, so we got it.
Well, it's a biological question.
Yeah, it is a biological question. And then the situation is that, you know, there are actual records, if you will, in South America, and some of the historians and priests that accompanied the conquistadors, that basically there were fabulous instances, which is in the book Genesis 6 Giants, of literally the natives recording that when these giant beings came and literally raped, pillaged, and plundered, that from heaven fell the lightning bolts upon them. And you and I would say, oh, that's corny and stuff, but when you're dealing with an indigenous people that can not only define what they look like, what they did, and what was the outcome, and you can go see rocks, evidently, that have had multiple lightning strikes, it puts it in different perspective. I think what's fascinating to me is that when you're dealing with mainstream, for instance, anthropologists, they'll just say, well, this was Gigantopithecus, okay, or this was Australopithecus, or they'll come up with their, you know, scientific sounding terms, yet we have in complete giant skeletons, and you never see those because they get relegated to the secret, if you will, what I think David Hatcher Childress called Smithsonian Gate, where, you know, stuff of importance that challenges the party line automatically gets hidden. I don't know, too. Let me just jump to this because I think it's important. Have you seen that the scientists, a couple scientists digging in Egypt, have come up with what they believe are evidence of Atlantis or handheld spherical amillaries?
Yes, yes.
And we got to talk about that because, you know, that's fascinating because it's happening right before our eyes.
All right, stay with us. Stephen Quayle, my guest. His website, very simple, Steve Quayle, Quayle.com. Or if you're already over there at coasttocoastam.com, as you look under tonight's guest, you just click right on, and there he is, Stephen Quayle. We'll be back with more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Gabby.
After dark, and we're giving out 500 autographed signed pictures with your name on it, pictures of me, to the first 500 people who order the After Dark newsletter, which is more like a magazine. The May issue, for example, is one heck of a magazine. A lot of it has to do with remote viewing, plus you're going to see a whole assembly of pictures that have been on the website over the past several months. How do you order After Dark? Couple ways. Toll free, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505, where you also get 14 issues for the price of 12. You'll also get a signed picture by ordering it from the website at coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Steve Quayle, my guest. Stephen, on your cover, by the way, of one of your books, Genesis 6 Giants, what is that picture?
Well, the Genesis 6 Giants photograph is a picture of a British explorer in the early 1900s surrounded by two Kashmir giants. The one giant on the right, as you're looking at the front of the book, is 10 feet tall. The one on the left is 9 feet tall. And it's kind of fascinating because if you look at their bone structure, their heads, just how big their heads are, George.
Oh, they're huge.
They're huge. It's kind of fascinating because when you go to one of the gold museums that's in Lima, Peru, they have some of the heads, actually mummified heads of some of these giant kings, Incan kings, and their mandibles from side to side are 24 inches. That's huge. You know, no pun intended, but those guys really had big heads. And one of the most famous Mayan king was a six-fingered, six-toe guy, and his name was Xambahlum. And again, the bottom line is these guys believe that they were descendants of the gods. For instance, Angkor Wat, you know, the famous temple that you always see in Cambodia.
Right.
The fascinating thing about Angkor Wat was is that they believed that that was the, how should I say that, the abode of the gods, and whoever would be king would be given a lingam stone, which is like a petrified piece of stone that was supposedly the phallus of one of the giants. And it's not just there, it's everywhere in the world where there's any type of, quote, civilization. They who start the civilization trace themselves back to this. It's kind of fascinating because when you go in and start really researching the background of the Aztecs and Quetzalcoatl and the whole situation with, you know, the coming deliverer, if you will, or in this case, the coming conqueror, that these prophecies that a lot of the natives and a lot of the indigenous people were looking forward to were handed down through the giants. And by the word, an interesting thing that most people may not know, but the first time the word bastard was ever used in history was in the defining of the offspring of the fallen angels who had sex with earth women. God calls them the bastards. So, you know, basically, you know, next time you use that word, think about where it came from. It was a word associated with fallen angels having sex, and the offspring became the bastards, and that's in the Book of Enoch.
How long did these giants stay on the planet?
Well, first of all, during there were giants appeared before the flood of Noah and after the flood of Noah, and it's fascinating because after the flood of Noah and a lot of the giants in the Holy Land were literally wiped out by Joshua and Caleb. I mean, you know, a lot of people couldn't.
Was Goliath a giant?
Oh, absolutely.
So he was one of these. All right.
Yeah, 9 feet. By the way, he had 6 fingers, 6 toes, and he had 4 brothers. Okay. And what people don't realize, you can go into 2 Samuel chapter, I think, 21, and it talks about the whole situation of David's mighty men fighting these giants, you know. And we talked, the last time I was on your show that we talked about giants, I talked about the statement that cutting someone down to size came into the language of the Romans when they were in Germany fighting the Germani,
right,
the tribe of giants. And literally, you know, the best they could get to was some of these guys' kneecaps, you know. And the old statement, cut them off at the knees. That literally came from history in the battle of Caesar's, you know, soldiers against the giants in Germany.
Well, the same thing with Goliath, just that name, that word.
Absolutely. And by the way, the word hero doesn't mean, you know, we talk about sports heroes or, you know, action heroes or heroes even in the golf. The real word hero is a transliteration of the word of a word that literally means mighty man, a giant. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. But all right, so the fallen angels, let me rephrase that question.
Sure.
Not the angels that were created or
right,
that were bred, but the fallen angels, did they stay on this planet or did they leave?
Well, first of all, you know, again, the fallen angels that committed sex sin, you know, in the Book of Enoch, it specifically talks about God bound them in chains. You follow me?
Okay.
And he literally locked them up, and that's that place called Tartarus, you know. And people can read that, and again, it's downloadable free. But there's other fallen angels out there that obviously are, you gotta ask yourself this, what is man? Why is man so unique that whether it's aliens coming on spaceships to the people who believe in that, or fallen angels, why are they always messing with, you know, mankind genetically, okay? Now, it's kind of a testimony, I think, to God's majesty to be able to build, you know, create women and women being the beautiful creation that they are, yet you've got angels that basically were created to live in their own realm. Understand, they were not to come into the human realm and, you know, carry on, so to speak.
It was a violation to do that.
It was a violation. In other words, they had their limit. They breached that limit. And they came and did this. Now, what's interesting, you asked me a question of, everything they give to mankind, was it bad? Well, all I can tell you is this, is that all of the, whether you're dealing with the myth of Pandora's box or the Hindu equivalent or any equivalent of, someone opening up, if you will, the forbidden knowledge, the bottom line is it always goes back to the same situation that the gods, meaning, you know, again, the fallen angels, and obviously to anybody on earth, if somebody can transform themselves, do miracles, you know, lift 10,000 pounds with a single wrist or whatever they can do, the bottom line is you would think they were gods. So these guys and their children, pretty much controlled the world. Then you get into the whole legend of Atlantis, and you get into the whole situation of the technology of Atlantis, you go into the book of Ecclesiastes, which says there's nothing new under the sun.
You know, I've always thought, you know, and I've always believed that the pyramids were built with some kind of very sophisticated technology.
Absolutely.
But if they were not, I could also believe that maybe they were built by hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of 10 to 15 foot giants who could move blocks.
Well, you know, let's go to the biggest stone that's known in the world, the quarried stone, and it's that Baalbek. Which is in Lebanon.
Yes, which some people think was a landing pad.
Right, but, you know, it's also known as Heliopolis. But the interesting thing about that stone, it's 2,000 tons, okay? And 2,000 tons, number one, we don't have cranes or anything that could move that. I, by the way, share your view that I do not believe that the pyramids were built by Hebrew slaves. I think Graham Hancock and his astronomy, showing how they line up with the different constellations, you know, Robert Bevall, even Robert Schock, you know, and Dr. Robert
mm-hmm.
Schock, you know, he's got problems too with the contemporary dating of the pyramids, you know, and I do too. I believe they're closer to 12,000-13,000 years old, not, you know, 4,000-6,000 years old.
Well, regardless of that, I mean, they could have been built by giants. That was
oh, absolutely. And let me say this. I'm sorry, I didn't catch what you were saying there. The thing that people have got to understand is all the great monuments of the world seem to be oversized to the typical man's height.
Right.
And I think that's the greatest evidence in my book that, you know, when you're dealing with the wonders of the ancient world, you know, you're dealing with a lot of stuff that's been destroyed. But some of these civilizations that we know and we have ruins of, everything is, what would I say, extra sized. In other words, it does not compute to have, the doors and the windows, you know, at the 12 to 14 foot level if everybody in those days is 6 feet. You know, it just doesn't compute. So the thing that's interesting is that when you get into the history of giants in North America, South America, you know, most of the tribes that came into these civilizations that we would say magnificent, for instance, the whole situation at Mexico City, you know, that really, if you look at the whole dimensions of Atlantis that were laid out in Timaeus and Critias by Plato, you know, you've got the whole, basically a micro view of what the ancients had presented Atlantis to be. So, and the Aztecs themselves, by the way, didn't claim to be the builders of that civilization.
Well, has anyone found a complete skeleton of a giant?
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Throughout the world's museums, probably the best place to begin is you first of all, you can't find them in the United States. There was a museum in Lovelock, Nevada, interestingly enough, that had a 9-foot mummified giant with red hair, okay? Kind of interesting. In Austria, in Switzerland, and especially the German museums and stuff, a lot of those artifacts that were so prominent and referred to, interestingly enough, started being, absconded with about in the late 70s to early 80s,
mm-hmm.
1970 to 80. And, you know, all I can tell you is that there are complete skeletons. I have in my office the femur that people can see that's on the website. Actually, it's a plaster cast. And the gentleman that owned that femur, the actual skeleton, the complete skeleton, came from Turkey. And the point is that when you're dealing with the skeletal remains, as I've said, you can go into South American museums and you can see heads. I'm talking physical heads that are anywhere from 4 to 6 times the size of a human head. And I'm not talking about the ones they claim are just bound, you know, by wrapping leather straps
right
on their head. I'm talking about from your jaw to your jaw. You know, if everybody would just grab that right now, you know, most people probably, 6-8 inches? You know, maybe 6 inches. We're talking 4 times that. We're talking the volume of those heads being phenomenal. And see, these are complete mummified remains, okay? And so the interesting thing is that in Tibet, at some of the, monasteries, they have actually what are called the golden sarcophaguses, which is like a coffin, and some of the guys that they have in there, and unless you're an initiate, you don't get to see them, but, you know, these are considered, if you will, the ancestral gods, and some of these guys are 12 feet tall. And, you know, what's interesting, George, is most people can't relate to that height. They just, you know, I mean, it's kind of like it's out of their mind. when I put on my website, I've got probably 50 pictures of contemporary giants, and these aren't people that suffer from gigantism or what's called acromegaly, you know, like Andre the Giant, where they get big and
right.
They get weak.
Yeah, his hands were huge, and his head was disproportionate to his body.
We're talking about big dudes, and there's a guy in there by the name of Johan Petrusen, who's 8'8", and I would encourage everybody who can get on the internet just to go and look at him. This guy is absolutely a monster because, you know, it's not only that people grow taller, everything becomes proportionately bigger as obviously, you know, to the size they are.
Well, you don't think they're quirks of nature?
No, I don't. I believe they are basically the genetic, manipulations from someplace down the line. You know, after you and I did our last show on giants a number of months ago, I received calls from people whose children had double sets of teeth. One of the interesting things about giants, as we talked about, they were the initiators of cannibalism. And it's interesting because a lot of the Indians in the desert southwest and in especially Nevada, Arizona, and California, there are a lot of skulls that are recorded in like 1940, 1950 found with two sets of teeth. And obviously the interesting thing is the only way the Indians that were normal size could kill them was to track them and wait until they went to a cave, you know, to have protection and build a fire in front of the cave and suffocate them to death. And Buffalo Bill Cody even talks about the Sioux bringing him the bones of one of the giants, and stating that, their legends taught that the giants in North America could run buffalo down and pick them up under their arms. Now most people can't relate to strength like that, but there are just literally thousands upon thousands of instances where giants, and I'll say this, my definition of a giant, you gotta be at least 8 feet tall, okay? But some of these guys in, England that were 7 feet 5 inches to 8 feet 5 inches, they could lift a ton with one hand. I mean, it's recorded, you know? This isn't just, nonsense that's out there. And I think that what I'm trying to do for people is to show them this, that history specifically says one thing, but the evidence that is out there says another. And I think that just as in the old days, if you will, the fallen angels came to corrupt the human race, I believe that the alien phenomena, especially as it relates to the sexual abduction and genetic manipulation, if you will, and sexual manipulation, is designed to build, if you will, a hybridized human that becomes less and less hybridized and more alien. A good example.
Well, you think they're doing that for the benefit of mankind or at the detriment?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The sum of all terrors is this, is that the benefit, you know, I know you've talked with people who've been abducted and, you know, you've met with them. I'm just assuming that you have. And the point is that as I've talked to those people, they carry, you know, some of them on the outside can carry a very, you know, kind of, oh, it's lovely, they're here to help me. But the ones that that I've talked to that have had serious abduction experiences are traumatized beyond what most people can even imagine. And, it's a very, very, expert and understanding person that can, you know, counsel with those people and help them get them free. But the point is I don't believe the alien phenomenon is benevolent at all. I believe it's, like your and my favorite, Outer Limits show Twilight Zone to serve man.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I do too, because I think that says to me in one graphic 30-minute segment what it's all about.
And that was a giant.
Yeah, it was a giant.
He was a giant.
And see, the thing that, do you remember an old movie, with Barry Sullivan, where they go to Mars and they all wear like slick leather suits, you know, and I think it was called something like Cannibal Planet. In that, with Barry Sullivan, it's kind of an old, late 50s movie, but they go to Mars and everybody's on Mars is dead, but when they go into one of these chambers, there are giant tables with giant skeletons, you know, like go leaning over on their arms and stuff.
Right.
And it's kind of fascinating because even the, if you will, some of the science fiction shows in the early 50s, you know, were dealing with this whole situation of gigantism as it related to other civilizations. And now Barry Shamish in his book, Return of the Giants, is talking about in Israel, you know, I mean, they're seeing flying saucers land and 9.5 foot tall guys get out, you know, and it's not just one or two people seeing this, you know, it's thousands upon thousands upon thousands. So the point is with the genetic engineering that's going on and the Human Genome Project, the point is, I believe that, you know, you have the obvious reason for wanting to identify the entire human genome, but you also have the, if you will, opportunity to identify anything that would not be human. And, you know, as we talked on a past show, even the British Museum has the DNA of Ramesses, you know, the king, one of the most famous pharaohs of Egypt. And they're on record in a news release saying that it will be possible at some point to bring Ramesses back.
Well, if there was not a Book of Enoch, would you still come down with this theory?
Yeah, because quite candidly, I didn't come up with it off of the Book of Enoch, okay? I came up with it straight out of the Old Testament, okay? Because it bothered me when you'd read about guys like Og who were so big, and you'd read about guys like Goliath, and, you know, I think everybody thinks Goliath was just kind of like a WWF wrestler or something. We're talking about very, very extremely large people. And, you know, again, after its kind, you know? And now what do we have, George? We've got people, scientists who can only see so far that are going into the transgenic realm, crossing obviously animal and human DNA. That's nothing new. You can go into Greek mythology and come up with probably 2,000 different variations of, man, animal, every kind of, multi-headed, multi-handed type individual, cyclops, if you will. The thing that is troubling to me is that we don't have, in my opinion, the ethical or the knowledge base to deal with what we're getting into, you know. And it's not, let me say this, my opinion of cloning is beyond what anybody can even imagine. Just like technology is 50 years ahead, so is the biological sciences. And again, when we hear about it, it's already past news.
Okay, when we come back, Stephen, I want to talk a little bit more, though, about these fallen angels as it ties into this. Because
sure.
If it happened once, I wonder if it can happen again. Stay with me. My guest is Stephen Quayle. I'm George Norrie. Back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Some of you might not have a computer, therefore you can't get to Steve Quayle's website. You can't look at some of the books that he has written. So I'll give you a toll-free phone number, 800-474-7870. I'll give it out again in a couple hours for you, 800-474-7870. But if you do have a website, it's stevequayle.com, and you spell it just like Dan did, Quayle. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Steve Quayle, my guest. Steve, by the way, are you related to Dan Quayle? I mean, you got the same spelling. I've always wanted to ask you that.
Well, let's just say this. I can spell, and I met him a couple of years ago when he was running for the president. Our grandfathers are related, so that makes us distant cousins. We both came from the Isle of Man, our ancestors.
Really?
Yeah, so I think I'm his third cousin.
All right, well, I always wanted to ask you that. I'm glad you set us straight on that.
Hey, George, may I say one thing, too? I just need to correct my toll-free number, because it's 1-800-424-7870.
Yeah, that's what I said.
No, I think you said 474.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's 800-424.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, if that's what I did, I apologize. I've got it written down as 424.
Yeah, 424-7870.
We're going to check the tapes. I got to see if I'm right or not. We're going to do that. I think you're wrong.
Well, if I'm wrong, I stand corrected.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Anybody email me. If I said 474, send me an email if anybody heard that. If it's 424, we're going to horsewhip Steve Quayle. That's what we'll do.
Listen, you asked me the question about are they going to do this again. You know, I think that's the obvious question to be asked at this point, and my answer is absolutely, and I believe they're doing it with what is now known as alien technology. See, one thing people have got to differentiate between is fallen angels and demons. They're not the same thing. Demons are disembodied spirits, okay? Angels have their own bodies, both the ones that are reserved in everlasting chains of darkness and the ones that are still loose, the fallen angels as well as the good angels, okay?
Right.
But demons, the very word means disembodied spirit. And the thing that's interesting is when these giants were killed, whether it's Goliath or any of the ancient kings we're talking about, the spirit of those entities are the demons. Now, demons have intelligence, and, you know, you deal a lot with ghosts, you deal a lot with the supernatural realm, you know, and talking to different people, poltergeists, etc.
Sure.
You know, the thing that people don't understand is that the alien phenomenon is doing the very same thing that the fallen angels did, and I believe it's because their offspring, in other words, the children of the fallen angels, the bastards, which turn into the demons, are there. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you can't deny the realm of the supernatural. Modern science and technology have, if you will, tried to do it for so long, they painted themselves in a corner, and now they've got to admit there are things they can no longer explain in just this purely natural mode.
I don't know what happened, Stephen, thousands and thousands of years ago, but I'll tell you this. Something dramatically happened here, be it gods who came down here, aliens who came down here, divine intervention, something spiritual, whatever happened, and it could have been a combination of everything. But for some reason, this planet was ripe for the picking, and boy, they sure did a job with it.
Well, I can tell you this, you know, even in a lot of the writings, even in the Islamic writings, interestingly enough, they talk about that Satan or Shaitan was, you know, commanded by God to worship the creation of God, not worship mankind, but worship what God did in creating mankind,
mm-hmm.
and basically wouldn't do it, okay? And it's kind of interesting because when you get into the whole, if you will, eschatological or the end time scenario in the New Testament, you see this incredible war taking place in heaven and on earth, you know, and you see basically the good and evil conflict, and you also see in that whole, if you will, that plan of redemption, the fact that even though the angels were made above mankind, at some point God in his, you know, ability to do it elevates mankind above the angels. The Apostle Paul said, don't you know you're going to judge angels? That literally means rule over them. I can say this, that most people would be horrified to understand that the theory of, you know, evolution didn't just come into the history books through Charles Darwin, you know, Origin of the Species. It was interesting that you can go into ancient writings, and basically it's fabulous because in the recorded statements of the angels, and not only in the Book of Enoch, but all kinds of extra-biblical writings, basically it was the devil that called man the monkey and said, I'm not going to worship that monkey that you've created, you know? And it's fascinating because, again, you know, we think of Charles Darwin, you know, the 1850s, and we think, oh, this is all something that's come in. It's older than people can imagine.
No, all right, so all of a sudden, they come down here, and you use the number 200 of them, and they breed, and do those fallen angels stay on this planet? I mean, obviously, do they die?
I mean,
they don't die, but again, in all of the writings, the specific fallen angels, see, there are thousands, probably tens of thousands of fallen angels, but only the 200 that originally, had sex with earth women, okay? Those are the ones that, again, I want to make it clear, the specific fallen angels that had sex with earth women, producing the giants, the mighty men of old, the men of renown, those get bound, okay, in everlasting chains of darkness. Those are the ones that, in the Greek word, it's called Tartarus, okay? T-A-R-T-A-R-U-S. Then, now, you know, now we've got, if you will, we've got an intelligent life form, non-human intelligence out there, the demons, if you will, and they're culling the herd, they're abducting human beings, they're experimenting on them, and they're in cahoots with some entities on Earth that have basically said, you know, hey, you give us power and you give us your technology and we'll basically cover for you. You know, George, as you know, this whole UFO thing, it can't keep the lid on it much longer, okay? Because even like in Russia, you know, and just in the last, you know, what, couple days, the entire Russian Baltic fleet and a large number of residents of what's called Kaliningrad, you know, basically saw...
They saw a single wing object fall into the Baltic Sea.
Right, absolutely. And what, I think they said at last count, 3 million people saw it.
And apparently it was captured on videotape.
Absolutely. So what we've got now is we've got with the internet and with thank God for talk radio, we've got a forum now that, you know, used to be this stuff would be talked in, if you will, the hush corners of universities, and now it's going through the airwaves and people are going, oh, you know, I've always wondered about that. I've always wondered about this, you know. And what's interesting, the whole issue of giants, how they relate to aliens, how the aliens relate to fallen angels. What I've tried to do is show this, that the tampering with the human seed, okay, the genetic, if you will, the genome.
That's the bottom line on all of this.
That's the bottom line. And see, what's so scary is this. Look, even Hitler sent out the SS to go and look for religious artifacts, whether it was the Grail, whether it was the Spear of Longinus, the spear that pierced Jesus' side, the Ark of the Covenant, you know. He was looking for everything that he could possibly find that had any, if you will, mystical power to it, okay? The whole book and movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where you see the scene of the little guy with the glasses, you know, fighting Harrison Ford up in the Himalayas for the little medallion that will show him where the Ark is. The bottom line is all that stuff is based on fact. And then they get to the end of the show and they take the Ark, put it in a crate and put it in a giant warehouse. It gets lost forever. And one of the problems is that, you know, there are absolute newspaper accounts, for instance, of, you know, vast finds in the United States that are written in contemporary newspapers. And they say the bones, the skeletons are shipped to the Smithsonian. And guess what? The Smithsonian says, well, we don't have any record of it. See, plausible deniability has to be put into effect just because, again, if you were to produce, and this is something I've told people, if I were to bring a complete skeleton to the forefront, it could be by DNA typing and everything that, look, this is weird because the chromosomes are different, but it's real. It's not fake. It isn't made by, you know, Stan Winston or whoever, you know. The bottom line is that it would start people to really question what they believe. So as long as you're controlling the matrix, if you will, all of the data, all of the input, and all of the conclusions, then you can basically get people to think what you want them to think. But see, the whole reason why the giants have been covered up in history is because you can't get away from the supernatural. And now, when you're dealing with the UFO phenomenon, you get right back into that supernatural phenomenon.
Well, do you believe that the giants are what some earthlings perceive to be as the gods?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the giants had strength. They had intelligence. They had, abilities that were just superhuman. And that's the whole basis of Greek mythology. And then the point that most people have got to understand is that not only the writings of the Bible and the writings of extra biblical books, but they talk about these things then going after animals. You know, in one of my books, Alien and Fallen Angels, it's got a poem, if you will, of a fallen angel talking about his love life with a cow. Well, then you get into Greek mythology, and I'm not trying to be gross. What I'm just trying to share is history's talking about this stuff, okay? and you get into the whole, if you will, the chimeras of Greek mythology and all of the strange, and whether you're dealing with the Cyclops or, you know, you're dealing with the merman or mermaid or the Tritons and all this stuff, you know, it gets wild. Now, again, someone says, well, that's just a bunch of phooey. Well, then why would scientists in this day and age try and be creating not only Franken food, another genetically modifying food that they don't even know what the results will be, but now they're modifying human beings? You know, the word transgenic comes into mind. And so the point is, they're saying, okay, well, we've got a lot in common with pigs. You know, they're always talking about growing in pigs, you know, extra ears or extra organs, because pigs somehow have less tissue rejection with humans. Isn't it interesting when Jesus cast the demons out of the pigs, you know, in the New Testament, cast the demons out of the Gadarene demoniac, the demons beg Jesus to let them go into the pigs. And they go into the pigs, the demons go in the pigs, and the pigs commit suicide. You know, people can't understand the spiritual realm. How about incubus and succubus throughout the Middle Ages? You know, people were always talking about sexes, or the ghosts having sex with either a male or female. And the thing is that I've read statements by movie stars in the last years talking about it. So the thing is that you can't get away. How can something that was a phenomenon, let's say 1500 years ago, be such a phenomenon today? It's a repetitious thing. You know, the Wadinga, this is kind of an interesting story. Cave drawings in Australia showing guys in white robes with kind of like a bubble helmet, and they're at least 9 to 12 feet tall. Mm-hmm, and the natives mm-hmm. come up. I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And you know, the thing is that this kind of stuff, immediately when it happens, listen, I had some listeners that listened to me on your show that called me and said they found some stuff, you know, in their backyard, you know, and when the word got out what it was, guess who showed up? The boys from the government, and actually threatened them with the confiscation of their property and thrown them into jail if they didn't shut their mouths.
Wonder why?
Well, again, there is absolutely a body of knowledge out there that I call arcane knowledge. There's, you know, we hear of black budgets and black projects, you know, secret stuff. And, you know, I think that what's going to be amazing to people is when they find out that, you know, there are certain governments of the world and aspects, governments within governments, if you will, people within organizations that have deals cut. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, unfortunately, they can't outfiddle this devil.
Oh, I have always been fascinated with Greek mythology because of the so-called talk of the gods. And they always seem to be not only supernatural, but also superhuman.
Absolutely.
And that, to me, means giants of some type. Let's talk a little bit about that as well. Why, throughout all of our history, then, do we have the perception that the gods or the god are somewhat bigger than life? Human, big, giants. Because maybe they were, Stephen.
Well, absolutely. You know, I would say this. I always separate little g's from the big, you know, what I call the God creator, okay?
Of course.
And the situation is bigger than life is, and this is something that I try and get people to understand. If you understand history, you see that it is truly bigger than life, you know? And again, with its architecture, with its understanding, with the diffusion, you and I talked about the pyramids, whether they're underwater off of Yongguni, you know, off of Okinawa in Japan, or the pyramids in China. You can't get away from the fact that there are pyramids all over the world. And you can't get away from the fact that all of these, if you will, structures that are unique are uniquely positioned to specific constellations in the sky. You can't get away from the fact that there are cave drawings in Altamira, Spain, and Lascaux, France, that have absolute star charts that, you know, are attributed to, you know, Neanderthal men. And that they knew things that Neanderthal men absolutely put within those star charts, things that they could not see with the naked eye. The Dogon tribe in Timbuktu, famous story, you know. The archaeologists couldn't believe that they knew about the Dog Star in Sirius because they just were convinced that somebody, a white missionary, had come there and told them all this stuff. Well, the point being is that the more they talked to their elders and the more they talked to their learned ones within the tribe, they found out that they'd never been visited by any white men, so it kind of blows the whole theory, you know. Again, the giant spheres, George, you heard about those giant spheres that have been found all over the world, and they're literally found in constellation style orbits around not only the Earth, but around unknown planets, if you will, and unknown constellations. We're talking about the proof of Atlantis that Professor Winslet, you know, he claims that now they're up to four, by the way.
Let's talk, though, about some of the recent finds in Egypt.
Yeah, well, this one came out of Egypt, okay?
All right.
And this is kind of a fascinating thing. Imagine, if you will, a dome of gold in your hand, and inside that dome of gold is a bunch of basically circular wires with like planet-like deals on them, and the entire hieroglyphics around the rim of the gold that you're holding in your hand are unknown to any Egyptologist, okay? And then imagine a sapphire, a blue sapphire crystal in the middle of it, and they can't figure out how to open them up.
Or what it's for.
Or what it's for. And I can tell you my guess is, and please, this is an educated guess.
All right.
But the educated guess is just like I use the word armillary sphere, A-R-M-I-L-L-A-R-Y, sphere. It's basically, it shows positions of stars, but not only that, but it absolutely has on the top of the dome, it has like a you know, it has the ecliptic. In other words, you know, the angle at which the stars and Earth are in relation, excuse me, planets and Earth are in relationship to each other. Not only does the ecliptic change as the rotation of the planets and these bodies change, but then evidently there is a point at which it opens up in the sphere of, if you will, it's not a sphere, it's actually a pyramidal-shaped blue sapphire, has access to it. Now, that's the one that was found in Egypt. This was just found, and the guy's doing a smart thing. He's not going to give it to the authorities until he's given it to the world first. You follow me?
Well, they're
going to
let him do that?
Well, let's just say this. He's already done it. If people want to see it, it's on ancientmedallion.com.
What do you do, sneak it out?
Yep, he snuck it out. Now, interestingly enough, because he snuck it out, three other individuals has found spheres in three other areas of the world, okay? And it's interesting because they're found in pyramid areas. What I'm saying to people is this, is that the knowledge that the ancient possessed supersedes and to a large degree is gone beyond where we've even gone. And though we think we're, quote, in the future, the technology we now are acquiring in the future has already been. And I believe that was a contribution of the fallen angels, because we're talking about a supernatural intelligence imparted.
All right, I'm going to have Lex link up, if he can, this website that you just gave me, ancientmedallion.com. I've got a picture of this thing, and this is one bizarre-looking artifact, I'll tell you.
And then there's I think, that, you know, it will blow people's minds. Now, listen to this. Just in the time that story came out, a couple from they put out a newsletter called Ancient Mysteries. They found a three-tiered, you remember the old argument about the Bimini Road?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they finally found a three-tiered platform in Bimini that's kind of blowing everybody's mind. In other words, it's manufactured. They can't say, well, this is just a natural rock, disturbance, because the multiple levels have been placed like bricks, even though they're huge rocks. And they go up on an even basis. In other words, level one is so many inches higher than level two is so many inches higher than level three. And I remember when Ribicoff and all those guys were down taking photographs of the Bimini Road, and, you know, when Charles Berlitz came out with his first book on Atlantis, what, almost 30 years ago.
Why do you title your next book Genetic Armageddon?
Because I believe, George, that we are headed for the most terrible future imaginable when you combine nanotechnology, genetic engineering, and robotics. In other words, it'll be worse than the Terminator, and I believe that the unseen hand before it and behind it is a supernatural, evil, malevolent, hateful, humanity-destroying entities, plural.
And all right, let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back. Still, I don't know if I gave out that wrong number or not for your toll-free number. Let's do it again, Steve. 800-424-7870. You got it. We'll be back with Steve Quayle in just a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'll tell you what, Lex is fast. We've got the website that Stephen just mentioned, ancientvandalion.com, already up on my website. It's right by Stephen's name, so of course while you're there, take a look at stevequayle.com. You might have to hit your refresh button there, but it's right under tonight's guest. Take a look at the medallion he was talking about. Strange, strange artifact that could be, they say, 13,000 years old. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Stephen Quayle, my guest. I'll tell you one thing I've always liked about talking with you, Steve. You never know what's going to happen when I'm chatting with you.
Well, we have a tendency to, you know, cover the world in a three-hour stretch.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Boy, we've had some programs before, too, haven't we?
Yes, sir.
My, oh, my, oh, my. Okay, now this book, the new book, Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters. That's a scary title, Stephen.
Well, it is a scary title, George, and the point that I'm trying to make for people and to get people to understand is everything I'm talking about is already on the drawing boards. People are talking about it. Scientists are bemoaning the fact that they believe that with their intelligence that they can substitute their intelligence, emphasis on their intelligence, for ethics and morality. And what I'm basically saying is we're going into a post-human phase, but we're going to pass through the transhuman. You know, interesting inventions have come on the scene. The soul catcher chip, which is a fascinating discovery. In other words, everything that you've ever seen, smelled, heard, tasted, experienced is being, you know, downloadable onto a chip. Then with a new body, the thing that you can basically be looking forward to in the years ahead, according to the transhumanists, is that they'll be able to decide, you know, once they've identified all the negative genes, you know, they'll know how to make, quote, a better human. But when you enter into the conversation, the supernatural element of someone seemingly being very, very understanding of you as a human, but secretly hating you because your creation, by the very fact that you're created in the image and likeness of God, it's a reminder that rebellion is, you know, in their background. I think it's kind of, if you will, the quintessential Frankenstein in a spiritual dimension experiment. And you know, I'll tell you this, as much as I've got to say this, it has shaken me up to even go in this direction, because when I start reading about all the genetic manipulation, one of the great articles that's written by the founder of Sun Microsystems, a guy by the name of Bill Joy, this was a classic. It's Why the Future Doesn't Need Us Anymore. It was likened to Einstein's paper. I think you can go, you know, track it down on the internet. But it's Why the Future Doesn't Need Us Anymore. There are so many people out there with phenomenal brilliance that are saying, wait a minute, unless we put the brakes on this thing, it's going to be worse than the Borg and the Terminator combined. You know, and with the technology of nanotechnology, in other words, being able to build from the atomic level up, it's kind of, if you will, it's a genetic Tower of Babel. And once these things get built, and understand, if there is, which I can prove, I think, with the evidence that's out there, a very malevolent as opposed to benevolent hand of wickedness headed this way, I think that people will get a real feel for what's up. And most people simply, you know, like all of us, we got so much going on that it almost sometimes has to hit us in the face, it being the news. Or we have to be presented something almost in a shock mode to almost say, well, I can't believe this. It's not that it isn't real. It's just that we haven't heard it before. So therefore, the first thing you want to do when you hear truth is something that you're not really wanting to hear. You want to reject it.
Hey, by the way, this ancient medallion thing may be one of the greatest little publicity stints, because as you follow through the bottom of the website, they direct you to this guy's upcoming book, which might be a pretty good book. So now
right.
I'm confused. I'm confused whether they're using this thing for the publicity stunt or whether they've created the thing as the publicity stunt.
Well, I think, number one, they're showing the photographs of it, okay? And the deal is that someone can say, oh, it's all fake, they manufactured it, et cetera, et cetera. But what's interesting is that why I'm saying that I kind of am keyed into this right now is because typically when someone finds a phenomenal artifact, a phenomenal device, if you will, a map that's 120 million years old, like the map that was found in Bashkir in the Ural Mountains. We talked about that, months ago on your show. The thing that's fascinating is that this is like, if you will, this is like shock therapy, and it's a wake-up call. You know, it's interesting, too, that the date on this thing from the crash UFO, I think they're about 9 days apart, you know? And what I say is when events start to cluster, you can begin to get a pattern. You know, it's kind of like pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that now, you know, with the whole UFO situation and you know, the denials and, you know, everything that's gone on, the whole history of the UFO investigation, bottom line is you got 3 million people watching it happen on videotape, you know?
Oh, and you can't get away from it, Steve.
You can't get away from it. I can't. I don't, you know, I just came into the possession of this thing today, the proof of Atlantis, you know? But what I think is interesting is that if it's true that they found three more, then obviously if there's 3, 4, and this gentleman suggests that they're going for 12. What I also think is interesting is that things are happening now. A really interesting story came out of the Hindustan Times. You know, we're talking about ancient technology, if you will, that's now. They found, George, a couple thousand-year-old Sanskrit, scrolls up in a monastery, and it was all about the Vimana flying machines of the ancient, Vedic myths of India. The Mahabharata talking about Gurkha, you know, with the power of a million suns and stuff. And they're talking about, listen, in those Sanskrit, scrolls, they're talking about things that are absolutely phenomenal. Somebody said, well, they have to be fake. Well, the bottom line is they've ran tests on them, and India is really big on this, and now all of a sudden India's announced a space program that they never even had until the Sanskrit, scrolls were found. I think it's fascinating how much stuff now is breaking loose in all dimensions. Like I said, they can't keep a lid on it much longer.
Well, I'll tell you this. You have done an incredible amount of work into this arena. And the one thing I have never asked you, Stephen, as much as I've talked with you, is what got you into this field? Why did you start investigating these areas?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and, I'm one of those guys that questioned. I mean, when I was going to college, you know, I was in anthropology. These guys, and please, there's some genuinely wonderful people out there, but studying about Dr. Leakey's finds, you know, and I wish they would have changed his name because I felt like a lot of his logic was pretty leaky. The bottom line is that I had this quest, I guess you'd say, to find out real history, you know. And I owe a lot of it, by the way, you know, to just the people that said, you know, you'll find out that there's a lot of truth in the Bible. By the way, I didn't come into this thing as being a Christian, you know what I'm saying? I came in as just somebody looking for, hey, I want answers. And, in reading about David and Goliath and the Nephilim and the whole situation with mythology, actually it was a course in college in mythology that I said, wait a minute, there's a central theme here. And I've got to nail that central theme down. And the whole thing was basically, you can't escape this thing, a hanky-panky on a worldwide level, you know? And then the children of the offspring, let's just call them the offspring of the fallen angels, they went out and they basically brutalized humanity and ended up eating them up. I mean, literally eating them, you know, like for dinner. And the interesting thing is that even studying the whole concept of cannibalism. So I guess to answer your question specifically, I was not getting the answers. I felt like the answers I was getting in college were not, how should I say this, they were not evidentiary. There wasn't enough evidence to satisfy me. So that's what launched me in this whole 30-year thing.
Well, you know, you're almost like an Indiana Jones type guy, a character to himself because of, you know, what you've done and your interest in all this.
Well, let me say this, you know, there are a lot of people that say I'm crazy, but as you know, George, I do my homework, and when I put the book on Giants out, 400 pages, you know, people said, I can't believe this, and they went and checked it out. I tell people, I've done my homework. If they'll do their homework, they may not agree with my conclusions, but they can't deny the evidence that's there. And what I'm trying to get people to understand is that there's a whole different world of history out there than what they've been taught. And if the conclusions that we're being presented with are based on false, if you will, facts, then I question the motivation of those presenting us with the false facts. And I actually believe we're being prepared for a quote, and this is a word I hate, but I'll use it. There is a group of people that absolutely wants to, you know, change the, if you will, the planetary structure and balance. They're willing to kill off a lot of people and to insert, if you will, into the human genome this new transhuman, if you will, genetically altered, technologically advanced thing. And I can tell you this, there is nothing I know that's scarier than that, because what makes humans humans, and when do humans cease to be humans?
Yeah, by the way, I now believe that this was a publicity stunt on this medallion. But you know what? It was so well done, it was well worth getting the wool thrown over our eyes.
It was.
It really was. Brilliant people. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, and sometimes, you know, it's kind of fascinating, because even in the brilliance of a publicity stunt, you go, okay, what are they going for? You know, what's the central theme? You follow me? If it's the book on Atlantis, if it's this or that. But I think what getting back to the UFO that just crashed, you know, that's big news all over the world tonight as you and I speak. This is really big news, because if it's a secret black project of the U.S. government, the Russians are going to want to know, why are we spying on them with the most top secret aircraft we have that supposedly replaces the Aurora? And if, you know, the Aurora is the aircraft that replaced the SR-71 Blackbird.
Uh-huh.
And this area that they're over is where there are 4,000 Russian nuclear missiles, okay?
Well, there's problems, by the way, in Chernobyl now, too. I don't know if you heard
that. Yeah, absolutely. You know, listen, there are so many problems right now that they're absolutely, you know, people had better realize that the world that they think is, you know, just out there is going to go along its own course. This thing is being speeded up in such a manner that we're going to be confronted what once was the future is now the present. And what do you do when all of the concerns for the future are dropped in your lap at once? Do you follow me? You don't have time to adapt.
You can't adjust.
You can't adjust. You can't even fathom it, because if it's out of the realm of your understanding, how do you then increase your understanding to basically be able to get your mind around it? And see, what I'm trying to do, and I think I've done it really successfully in Genetic Armageddon, you know, is this, it doesn't matter if it's SARS today, West Nile virus tomorrow, I mean, those are all bad, but at some point, when you've got this, if you go, almost the eternal quest, okay, to come up with the ultimate killing machine, what do you replace it with, you know? And I think that's what people have got to understand, because in the world of biological engineering, and I deal with that in this book too, because the name is Genetic Armageddon, the bottom line is you can put forth, viruses, pathogens, you can genetically alter genomes, you can go transgenic, jump species. And when you start to go there, you see, George, how it can bring us right back to the whole, if you will, Greek mythology and the monsters? It is so apparent what's being done, and obviously that's what I hope to do, to provoke at least some discourse and get people's eyes open so they can say, man, is this really what I want to watch happen? And I'm one of the people that's saying, if you don't understand that the cyborg man-machine is coming to a town near you, you don't understand the writing of some of these guys who are, quote, considered the elite thinkers of our day, and really what they've put forth is their plan.
We have mapped the human genome to the point now where they said a week and a half ago that it is like having a manual of how to build a human body.
Exactly.
What happens in the next few years with this ability now that we have this blueprint of the body?
Well, I'll say something startling and remarkable to you. I believe the human genome has been mapped a long time ago. I believe that when they basically brought the study out, if you look at who actually was responsible for a third of it, it was a Wellcome Sanger Trust. And if most people, you know, are familiar with Margaret Sanger, you know, basically the mother of eugenics. See, what I'm saying is that if you get into this whole realm of the Uberman or the Superman, you know, the whole, if you will, build a better man type concept, who is it that defines what the better man is? And when it's left up to committee, and the committee is, how should I say this, being influenced by evil spirits, I don't think that that which is going to come out of that production committee, if you will, is going to be something that's going to be very wonderful. And you know what? The wonderful things that make us human beings, that I believe God created us with, love, understanding, you know, just the ability to communicate, the ability to identify, to empathize. I think all those things are being stripped too, because again, one thing that you can know about technology, technology certainly seeks its own sanitation level. You know what I mean by that? If technology has always got to build it bigger, better, and faster. And, you know, anything that doesn't fit into that mode, you know, basically doesn't make the production cut.
No, not at all. But it does happen.
It does happen. So if it's happening on a micro scale, so to speak, what happens on a macro scale? You ask me what's next. Well, I can tell you this, that obviously what they're doing now is the whole thing is basically trying to get people so that they can live forever and continue to download their memories. And then that's not enough. You'll be able someday to, and this has already been postulated by an Oxford professor and his wife, be able to share other people's sexual encounters by downloading it over something that will be the next generation or two generations of the internet. You follow me? It's going to be a mental prostitution. And I mean that with, in the sense of they're already talking about that. They've already funded the studies on that. So where does it end, you know? I mean, where does it end?
Well, I'm sure they're going to do it, too, for the benefit of mankind, don't you think?
Well, I tell you this. Whenever I hear that, I just can't get away. And I know I don't mean to make it sound like a broken record, but the benefit of mankind, ask yourself this. Who ultimately benefits? If there's a committee that decides what's acceptable, who lives, who dies, you know? The ratio, and what really concerns me is that at some point, people begin to be looked at as a food source. And by the way, it's already being postulated that if enough, diseases infect the animal community, what we need to do is genetically alter human beings as a food source. And that's literally being talked about.
You mean, whoa, genetically alter human beings as a food source so people could eat people?
Raising people, just like yeah, I'm not putting you on.
Soylent Green, what was
Soylent
it?
Soylent Green, and it's just like the Time Machine. You remember with the Eloi, you know, that were raised
yeah.
by the Morlocks?
Yeah.
And please, George, I'm not making this up. I'm not trying to sound sensational. This is what's planned. And, you know, so when I go out and I scour the world and I talk to people who are scared to death, and these people have come out of what I would call government think tanks, you know, and people who have basically had an encounter with God, and they're saying, I don't want to be in the monster making business, you know? And I can only tell you this, again, what we think we know is in the past already. The whole cloning situation, it's gone so far beyond, and I'm not talking about the Raelians and that thing. I'm not talking about the clowning around. I'm talking about the true science that takes place in obscure countries and obscure laboratories with the most horrific experiments that are imaginable by humanity.
Well, you know, they said a few weeks ago that at this point they think it's impossible to clone a human being. They just can't even get to clone a primate, and they think that there's some kind of genetic obstacle there.
Well, I would say this, that obviously obstacles, you know, when you think of where we were in the Human Genome Project as far as what was announced, you know, I mean, it used to be thought it would take, you know, so many decades to do it, and we knock it out in so many years, you know. And again, what I'm saying is that the problem with knowledge increasing without having the understanding, I say this, where scientists come into conflict with God, they may be able to see step five. God sees step 5 million. And it may be step 10 that ultimately you've just basically annihilated the entire planet. I think that's why, you know, in the prophetic discourses of Jesus, he said if the days weren't shortened, there'd be no flesh left alive.
Let's open up the phone lines at the top of the hour. You want to do that?
Oh, absolutely. This is startling stuff. This is remarkable stuff. And I think as people, you know, have comments and they have, you know, feedback.
Steve Quayle, my guest. We're going to be back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast. Now, I also want you to get up to his website, stevequayle.com, or if you're already on coasttocoastam.com, you don't have to get out of that. You can just go to tonight's guest and just click it, link right up, and there you are. And also the toll-free phone number. If you want a little bit more information on some of his history and his works, 800-424-7870. That's 800-424-7870. And we have taken down the tremendous publicity stunt of the ancient medallion off my website. It was fun while it lasted, huh? I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM and your phone calls. Don't go away. I'm George Norrie.
The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George Norrie toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling the AT&T International Operator and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Fascinating discussion tonight with Stephen Quayle. Now we're going to come right back and we'll use your phone calls with him as well as we check into aliens, fallen angels, and giants on Coast to Coast AM. Steve, the late Joseph Campbell, an expert in mythology, did some of his works have any influence on you at all?
I think Campbell did some interesting, work and stuff, but really not much at all, because I sort of went in a different direction, totally different direction.
Okay, well, that direction will lead us to more phone calls, so let's go and take them now, because this hour is going to fly by very quickly. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George, this is Trish.
Hi, Trish.
I'm calling from Tacoma. I just got to start by saying this is by far the best show I've heard, and thanks for taking me on.
Well,
anyway.
Thank you. Hey, you had quite a scare up there in that town today, didn't you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have a little advice. If you're waiting to send off a bill at the last minute to get it postmarked at the main post office, don't do it.
No, not right now.
Especially if it's an IRS payment. Anyway, so, yeah, let me jump to this because I know I'm limited on time here.
Yeah, there's quite a scare out there. Go ahead.
It was. Anyways, now, Stephen mentioned something about genetic Armageddon. And I was curious to know if he didn't really get into it yet, or maybe I missed it, but is he referring to, I guess, is this a main battle between the, quote, I guess, demons versus like the saints or the believers or the saved or whatnot?
No, I don't think it was a fight between good and bad, but Stephen, get in here and discuss this with her.
Well, actually, it is a fight between good and evil from the standpoint of this, that with modern science believing that they're God and they can do anything, and not being able to see the ramifications of, let's say, or the unintended consequences of some of their actions, I think they're playing into the hand of the very, if you will, the forces of the universe, the powers of darkness, the devil, that which wants to destroy humanity. You know, let me just give you a real quick statement by Sir Martin Rees. He's Britain's foremost astronomer. He's considered one of the most brilliant men in the world, okay? He wouldn't agree with me on any of the spiritual stuff, but he says history's worst technological catastrophes could kill millions or billions of people in this century, and to prevent them, society may need to consider restricting specific types of scientific research. The famed astrophysicist proposes a new book. You know what the name of his book is, George?
No.
Our Final Hour.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm saying is that he would come at it from a purely physical standpoint. I'm coming at it from the spiritual standpoint and saying that I believe specifically that demons, disembodied spirits, are the driving force behind the alien phenomena, which is to seduce humanity into accepting its supposed help when all that is planned is its destruction.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Trish, appreciate it. By the way, in Washington and Florida today, nothing happened, but the Postal Service Center evacuated when they found a white powder.